much, Marava. Any further questions from members? Yes, Honourable Member Ross, followed by Honourable Slough.
Thank you, ma'am. Just on the question of the $20 billion, which sounds such a nice amount. It's lovely to speak about it. But just the application of that, is there, can't you just give us a breakdown in terms of perhaps the broader intention that you know at this point in time? Will it be for renewables? Will it be for nuclear? Will it be a mix? And when was the memo of understanding, when was it signed, and when do you expect it to be becoming more definite as to in terms of the conditions that we have? And I fully agree with you, it's good to have some source of funding so that you can have a bit of leverage. That's strategically very well done. But just in terms of the progress of this amount, to make it a bit, just put it more in a tangible context, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Slough.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think this is a very exciting presentation that has been put to us. But the trap that you always find yourself in energy is that the good thing that you do has got negatives every time. Now, the battery technology and how we can use it has an advantage of assisting in the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. But the disadvantage of trying to think the number of cars we have in South Africa and potentially we may have increased in the next year. Actually, it's annual growth of car sales says to you that if all those cars have got to be in the charges at night, the consumption of electricity as compared to what the situation is today will rise maybe 3 to 4 times, and we need to think about how we are going to deal with that negative come the time the battery technology effectively takes place. Thanks.
Yes, Honorable Khweli.
Thank you, Chair. Just the issue around security of liquid fuel supply, particularly with the kind of instability in the Middle East at the moment. I just wanted to find out, are we currently, because I know there is huge storage capacity at Saldanha for crude oil, are we currently storing crude oil in there in the event that our supplies of crude oil from the Middle East actually get cut off or get significantly reduced? I'd just be interested to find out about that. I mean, that's the one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is, of course, also the refined oil, and currently I think a lot of our refineries are not operating at full capacity. It's about 70% capacity. And also, are we then storing the refined oil that we do have? What is the situation with regards to storage of our strategic stock of liquid fuel? Because I think that is vital in this whole equation.
That's it. Okay. Let me add a few questions from my side as well. Once again, thanks for this illustrious input. It's very, very helpful. It makes us really get a better understanding of what obtains in the and it's in the international arena. If I've missed this, apologies, but the International Relations Unit within the department, where exactly is it located? given its strategic influence and significance more than anything. It's just interesting to have a sense where is it located in the department. When you make when you made a reference to gas in the region, you highlighted the need for anchor customer or customers. Can you help us take us through as to whether you have identified who those potential anchor customers may be, the extent to which that has been activated, not necessarily by the department now, because that has to do with the trading, access to gas, whether from household or from commercial and industrial angles. When you came to the Venezuelan links with us, you raised the issue of near-producing assets, access to near-producing assets. What are those as compared to non-producing assets? Why Venezuela only? Wouldn't that be applicable to other deals as well? With regards to Lesotho, as a matter of interest, there was a deal that came in the papers between a South African investment company, Lesotho, and China, a Chinese concern. I think it was 110 billion, somewhere there. Very interesting wind energy deal. I see it's not mentioned here. Can you just take us through a little bit about it? Because I would assume that nothing like that goes through without drawing the attention or even the involvement of the department. Although I'm still asking questions, but I'm just going through the presentation page by page. The partnership on energy efficiency cooperation, we need more detail. In fact, if you could help us with more documentation on that, that's very important. Because at some stage, we're going to be dealing with that more intensively at the committee. So please inform and empower us in time. I see you make reference to CCUS here, that's slide 10. I don't see the numbering, but I think when I look at others, it's slide number 10. What is CCUS? Sorry if I missed it. And as a matter of comment, one of the members, when we were in COP 17, we met the Norwegian parliamentarians who are keen to work with us on the carbon capture and storage project. So rest assured, some down the line that will come up again. I thought last week I would be able to meet the ambassador of Norway just to start the ball rolling on that one. Some kind of a joint oversight or whatever we're going to help parliamentarians, because from the other side, governments are already interacting. Around wind energy, you made reference to Switzerland with no details. Can you help us with that? Clean Energy Ministerial Forum. Attract some attention to some of us, particularly the role of South Africa as the ambassador for clean energy in Africa. What exactly is this role? What are the programs in this role, if there are any details? either now or in due course, something that can be shared with the committee in a few weeks' time, at least within 2-3 weeks. Just as a comment, honorable members, I'm sure when we handle the energy efficiency issues, this super efficient appliance and deployment initiative will have to come back again. Probably, or most definitely, we definitely have to pull in SANEDI, the Bureau of Standards, and CSIR. I suspect CSIR may be handling that, but particularly Bureau of Standards. I'm sure, so that we know the appliances. And the Mexican model, I'm sure we'll work with the department to get much more details around the Mexican model in terms of the appliances. I've heard about it. I was working with the DG's office to see if we can get more information around that. Sounds interesting, save the fact that we need to get much information as to how does it work, you know, changing old fridges with new ones, you know, subsidies. Of course, there's a lot around that, policy and legislation behind it. SANEDI will be, we still owe SANEDI an invitation, if you remember. I'm looking at the smart grid initiatives. A lot is being said about that. Energy Forum with China. I hope when you have your initiatives or your meetings, you can invite us, at least as observers. We don't want to be left much behind. The reason is that you already have an exchange mechanism between the Parliament of South Africa and the Chinese People's Congress, or the Parliament of China. So in keeping with that you know, formal partnership, there's nothing wrong for us to also link and be exposed to that. Coming to bilaterals, one area which we all are always very interested in, you know, that of localization of manufacturing and technology transfer. Just as a comment, we need to look at prospects on that. Yes, reference was made, but I'm sure we should keep in our minds as we roll out and act on that area, we should be clear as to what is in store for us. When we had our energy public meeting last year, there was a lot of debate as to whether we do have prospects for that or not. In fact, within this month, we will be having another energy public meeting, and we will be repeating last year's public meeting to really get you know, a better sense as to whether there are real prospects for job creation. Of course, being a function of local manufacturing as well, and linking that to technology transfer, just as a comment. So please let us keep that in mind very seriously. Statements are fine. Intentions and MOUs are okay, but down the line, we are among the people who are keen to see some little bit of strategy and detail on that. Not very, very much detail, but, you know. That links with the EPAP 2. Of course, we did invite ITC at some stage for that. So we need to keep that in mind. In fact, amongst other things, we need to ensure that we see whatever work done, the impact it has on EPAP, on job creation. The year. I'm sure all of my members will be agreeable that at some stage the minister herself needs to share with us her impressions of that. I was there with Mama Tibela, I think Honorable Ross, I don't know who else, Honorable Grayling, you know. But if you look at the declaration that came out of that, it has profound significance into the future. Take into account what has just been related to us in such a context. So let's keep that in mind. We'll try and work on that. I thought we would have details on the multilateral bodies around the nuclear energy, and also, although you made reference on Maraba to an extent, but still, one would be interested is to, is there an African on Africa program on nuclear energy? I know there aren't many countries. For example, I didn't know that Uganda has started, you know, developing interest in nuclear energy. One thing I missed was the declaration of intent. Is it a declaration of intent with us only, or is it with others? If others, whom? Sorry if I missed that one. Still around funding, you mentioned European Investment Bank. What are the prospects of getting financing there given the crisis of the Eurozone? That's a reality. Can you be clear that there are still prospects of getting funding that in that angle? And furthermore, whilst one appreciates that the China Development Bank Corporation is coming to the fold, but still, one would be interested if there are any from the other partners of BRICS, and generally any of the other South-South partners interested in providing funding. Let's come to the regional initiatives. You made mention of policy, that there should be harmonization of policy. Shall I say there also should be harmonization and coordination of legislation to members? Hence, amongst other things, I thought by now would have heard a response from the speaker as to whether they would allow us to interact with our counterparts in the region. The risk is that if governments move speed ahead on their own with the legislatures lagging behind, down the line that catches up with us. So it is important that we also take the initiative. I'm just raising the comment that we need to keep that in mind. I don't say we don't have a regional parliament like IALA or ECOWAS, but we do have a parliamentary forum which at least should address itself to this issue of harmonization. I'm very insistent that you cannot harmonize policy on its own without ensuring that there is also a concomitant harmonization of the legislation. Please invite us to your workshop on biofuels and food security. We don't want to be left behind now, because a lot is happening. In fact, by the way, honorable members, I picked up in one month's magazine, the African Energy Journal, that the southern region in Africa is the only one that has a formal energy trade arrangement. Other regions, central, east, west, and north, are still about to explore that, or exploring that. They're looking at us, the southern region, as the as a model. Regarding the demand and supply situation, I'm glad that the ease of economic growth projections have been raised, but I hope when we handle this in future, we'll look at that a little bit more in detail, and not necessarily in depth detail, but just have a sense as to, you know, what are the projections in economic growth and what are the demands, so that we can have a sense as to how adequate are those plans. When one does admire and take cognizance that there are a number of projects or project planning in place, but the extent to which they will be, you know, responding to economic growth could definitely be, or is definitely, of significant interest to all of us. I'll speak on behalf of the members. I'm sure they'll be interested in that. This is Abona project. It's a very interesting project. What is the rationale behind? Why work out a network independent of South Africa when the grid is supposed to be a region-wide grid? I think also we need to be clarified as to the extent of depth and maturity of the regional program, because as it is now, it appears vague, quite broad, scrapping on the top, or is that because your presentation was specific for today's meeting, otherwise behind, there's actually an in-depth and more detailed program worked out for the regional energy integration. In fact, you know, just on that, if Netesla, we remember, from a SADC angle, there is the regional economic integration. I know trade and industry handles that. Now, are these two competencies talking to each other? From ministers of trade and industry, they are working on this regional economic integration. And surely, as a subset or a component of that, regional energy integration is expected to be there. Sorry I took so long, but the last part is there hasn't been much said, unfortunately, around participation in global and continental forums. Because we said on international programs, UN, for example, and also how far is your international relations strategy document? When are we going to get something out of it? I see it didn't make any reference to short-term energy market, biomass energy conservation project, or PROBEC, unless you felt that, you know, they've already, you know, put a lot on the plate. But it would be helpful to say a little bit more about those as well. Thanks for now. Yes, Madam Lotto.
I want to sound more educated tomorrow when I interact with people. So I would want you to help me read this other slide 23. For instance, when you say, I'll give you an example of, let me pick up countries quickly. I need to get, Botswana. You say available capacity is 190, but peak demand is 553. So that is that a shortfall?
I want to be able to read this thing in future. Because you show, for instance, yeah, Botswana is another example. Then you have, I think, Lesotho. I think I saw Lesotho.
Swaziland as well.
Lesotho, yeah. You find that available capacity 72, demand, peak demand is 121. So, and what does that signify? So, in Mozambique also. Two last questions, quick ones. I've written them and misplaced them, but I'll get them so quick. The concept of near producing wells or whatever, I think it's run through the project, the program, where they're saying they're encouraging Petro SA to go into either producing or near producing wells or whatever. So I just want to find out, before you reach this near producing wells or fields, yeah. Now, how does it work? In practice, if somebody has done the exploration, and after the exploration, they got their money and say, okay, this is an identified field for further development. So that's when Petro SA comes in. And so I just wanted to be clear about that concept. The last one was which I thought I missed by mistake is Petro SA in Mozambique. We have heard from our interaction with Petro SA that the feedstock is going to last, I think, less than 5 years or 5 years, I can't remember, but it's for a limited period. So I just wonder how far the discussions with between Petro SA and Mozambique in terms of securing the feedstock so that Petro SA could be sustainable. Is it something that's going to be happening soon or just endless discussion?
The floor is yours, DOE.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just quickly respond on a couple of the questions and leave the majority to Madam Maraba. On the issue of Honorable Ross's question on the crude oil storage in Saldanha. Yes, that Saldanha Bay, to my memory, is operational. That's basically where we keep our crude stock at an average of around 10 million barrels there. When it comes to the refiner, to refined products, that normally is kept by the companies themselves because of the time period that to be used within a specific time period with, so that it doesn't lose the specifications and all of that. So that one is still working. And as it is, as some are aware, that we do have continuous discussion between ourselves and the oil industry in terms of the level of the stock that they keep for us to have sufficient stock. On the question, Chairperson, on the international coordination in the department, the international coordination chief directorate is within the office of the COO, one of the chief directorates in that office. On the issue of the clean energy ministerial, I will leave that to Madam Maraba to give more details on the work of the minister as the ambassador for Africa. Chairperson also commented on the issue of the number of MOUs and agreements that you've.
Can you bring the micro closer to you?
I was saying you've also commented on the issue of the agreements and MOUs that you have signed as a department and where are they in terms of implementation. What the minister initiated or asked us to do towards the end of last year was to look at all the MOUs that the department has signed, some dating as far back as some in the 60s and 70s. It's all about the 70s. So we just completed that exercise. We're finalizing the report for her. We're looking at each agreement that has been signed in the name of energy within the DME environment and also within, of course, the independent or the energy environment, looking at which ones are still active, which ones have been overtaken by events, which ones have been implemented, which ones still need to be implemented, and which one do we still need to keep? So if that exercise we've just completed will be given to the minister in the next couple of weeks, we could share that report with you at a later stage once we've got the process finalized. It shouldn't be a problem. On the issue of the energy ministerial conference that we held, that was held last year, we have taken note of the chair's interest for the minister to come and share her views there. But I take it that will be now a record job, not mine. But we've taken note of that. We will give a report back when we give the overall report on the issue. Also, we've taken note of the invitation to workshops and summits and endeavors that we'll be having. I know that starting from next month, the minister has declared the March month, the energy month in the department. We will be having quite a number of endeavors happening next month. In fact, we have identified three. We're hoping that it's going to, as officials, that we'll be able to carry out at least a minimum of three endeavors next month. We will make sure that the office is made aware of the dates and the venues as soon as that is finalized. We will, sometime in May, having an EU, what's the right terminology? It's an EU-Africa Energy Partnership Conference. As soon as we've got the dates, we will forward that to Mr. Ariko as well. It's happening in May. So as and when they come up, we'll just make sure that from Ms. Maraba's office, they also copy a record on those days. It shouldn't be a problem. The International Coordination Strategy document, yes, that one has taken a little bit longer than we wanted to, but what we've been trying to do is to try and involve as many role players as possible, because it's not just a strategy for the department, it tends to affect the energy sector in general. So that one is been finalized. We're just waiting for one or two comments. In fact, the DG is expecting it on top of her table this coming Monday. So we're hoping that within the next couple of weeks it should be finalized and ready for distribution in terms of that. Thank you.
Let me start with the gas. I'm going to start with the gas question. What does an anchor customer mean? Basically, when you are looking at developing a gas market, you need to have the source, that is the gas itself, which is a feedstock, but you also need to have a market. And the third issue, which is critical, is the infrastructure. So in South Africa, we have the Sasol is one of the major customers for gas, and they are getting enough from Mozambique to meet their needs, but we need to expand that and include power, include reticulation in homes, include use in the other industrial, in light industrial, and also the commercial sector. So and we also use, in the long run, we also need gas for the GTL. So when we say an anchor customer, we need a confirmed market for the gas, which would then give confidence to investors to invest in the development of the gas infrastructure and also into the development of the gas assets, particularly the small pockets of gas that are found off our continental shelf, like your Ubu Desi. Then you also have the Kudu gas. Then you also have the other small pockets of gas on our continental shelf. But once we have a market which is established, they can now start investing, linking up, and then piping into the market. Then if you look, for example, in Port Elizabeth, I think we have an LPG infrastructure that can also be easily converted to normal gas so that you can pipe your gas through that. In Johannesburg, we also have a gas infrastructure. You can also expand that and reticulate into more houses. In Pretoria, I think Sasol is also starting a reticulation on one of the developments, in the new development. So the market is being tested, and there is potential for reticulation, so that we end up, in the long run, we need to end up using each particular type of energy carrier for its most suitable use. For example, gas will be more efficiently utilized if we use it for space heating and cooking and into chemical production. Then your electricity, the normal electricity, you can also, you call to electricity, will also be based for all the other electrical requirements. So when I say the income customer, I'm saying we need to have sufficient demand for gas, and then to give impetus to investors to invest in the necessary infrastructure, and to also exploit the gas reserves that we have, and also to the infrastructure. For example, if you have to import LNG, you need a regasification plant, which would allow you to regasify the gas and then use it for whatever means you want to. Then that is being, I think the market is almost there. The IPP gives a provision for that. Petro SA will need more gas in the long run, and the potential for reticulation is there. Then there was also a question on near producing assets and producing assets, and why Venezuela? The near producing assets is, you know, when you are involved in the exploration and production, we have what we call a typical production profile. So at the first phase, you explore, you just like in mining, you go out and say, here is a piece of land that I've been given, but where would I find the gold itself? Where would I find the oil itself or the gas? So that process is risky and it's very expensive, but it has got very high returns. Petro SA has started off by going the exploration route. They've been offered blocks, and some of the blocks were offered at a bilateral level. They were not very expensive, but the exploration itself is expensive. So in order to mitigate their risk, they have also reviewed their strategy and said, henceforth, they will move into near-producing and producing assets. Near-producing assets is where the exploration has been identified, the reserves have been identified, but you now need to develop what we call well development, where you need to sink the well and then prepare it for production. That process can take between 3 to 5 years to do, depending on the size of the well. So they are now going for those assets because they are definite. Something has been identified. You just need to now put your money in order to participate in exploiting that particular resource. Then the producing asset is you buy equity into a well that is already producing. So you just go and buy 5% share. Normally, it's called farming out. So most companies, depending on their financial circumstances, may decide to farm out a near-producing asset or a producing asset in order to limit its cost, or maybe it has got a cash constraint and want to exploit another resource to get money. They actually farm out the near-producing assets. Some even farm out ordinary blocks for exploration. And Petro SA is also going into the strategy to look into farming out in areas where they are involved in exploration. Then why Venezuela? When Petro SA decided to go that route of focusing on near producing and producing assets, Venezuela was the first choice, and they were willing to look into our MOU, and they agreed and signed on that context. And Petro SA is currently looking at the mature fields, and I'm sure we are close to doing something. They are close to doing something. So it just came at the opportune time when the policy had changed, and they were keen to work with us. Then the Lesotho RSA China energy deal, we have also read about the deal in the newspapers, and we are waiting for the formal process of the government approaching us. But what we are aware of, if they are going to export the electricity so generated, they will also need to go through possibly the IPP route for them to secure the opportunity to be able to sell electricity to South Africa. So we have not yet been formally approached, and as a department, we are also reading the news in the newspapers. Then with respect to the partnership, the international partnership for energy efficiency, the partnership was originally started by the G20 countries because they realized that in order to save electricity, it is important to have this energy efficiency accord where countries signed to ensure that they harmonize their policies, their regulations, and they promote energy efficiency. Because energy efficiency has been regarded as a low-hanging fruit where countries can save on energy and save the cost of investing in new power stations or new generation capacity. So that partnership has been initiated, it's operational, South Africa has been invited, and an approval for us to join has been given, and we are now in the process of applying, but there is a membership fee attached to the partnership. Then on the issue of the CCUS, particularly the U part of the S, carbon capture and it's now called carbon capture use and storage. Yes. So the use element has actually been introduced by the Chinese. They said that it is not enough to capture the carbon and store it. We need to also be innovative and think of ways to use the carbon. It's such a big resource, it's giving everybody a headache. And the best way is also to start investing in using the carbon. So we now have a stream of experts working on technologies related to carbon use. In China, they have a plant where they take the carbon, they put it, they concentrate it, it will be like an ice ball, then they can sell it to companies which are producing the Coca-Cola and so on and so forth. So they have initiated the study, but it needs to be applied at a larger scale. In the U.S., they are now looking at actually even capturing CO2 from the air and reducing the quantities. But the studies are on a very preliminary stage. They are extremely expensive. And as a developing country, we are just to follow behind and copy the initiatives. But there are initiatives to also look at just using the carbon instead of storing only. Then in terms of the energy efficiency with respect to Switzerland, the bilaterals that I have indicated were just put in to highlight some of the countries that we have relationships with. We didn't mention all of them. For example, Switzerland has signed an MOU with us, and they've also assisted us in funding a project where we are looking at auditing, measuring, and verification of energy efficiency. If a company comes and say we have a green building, you need to know what does that mean. How do you say determine that it's a green building? How can we as South Africa collectively measure our impact of the energy efficiency deployment? So in order to do that, we need an auditing system, we need a measurement system, we need a verification system, which is also not only South African in nature, but which is pegged at international level, so that we can compare what we are doing in South Africa with what is being done globally. So to do that, the Swiss government has given us funding to look into the development of the tool that will allow us to measure our energy efficiency. So many other countries, it's unfortunate we can't mention all of them, have given, are playing different roles in different areas. Then with the Clean Energy Ministerial, what are the programs and how are these programs being implemented? And why is South Africa, what role does South Africa play as an ambassador? As I've indicated to you, the clean energy is only participate. Sorry, 24 major economies forum participate on that particular clean energy ministerial. They also at that forum we don't have any other African country other than South Africa. So what we learn from there, we make sure that we also share with the other African counterparts. Secondly, what is being done there? We also, the minister also makes sure that it incorporates the African countries. For example, the wind energy atlas, we motivated that a global wind energy atlas be developed so that it covers the African continent as well, to enable them to have at least the identification of the potential areas where wind turbines can be placed to generate wind. The same applies to the solar atlas. It's also going to include the continent. Then there will be pilot projects for certain initiatives. We will be in a position to push that for such pilot projects be also offered to the African countries. So that's why we say that it's ministerial, minister is an ambassador. Then the CE3, the women clean energy, women economic empowerment. While we are talking about that empowerment in South Africa, at international forums, at regional forums, and at the Conference of African Energy Ministers, the minister also talks to these issues. She's also linking up with her counterparts, informing them of these developments and asking them to participate. So that's how she is actually taking some of the issues that are raised through the Clean Energy Ministerial onto the continent. One of the initiatives of the Clean Energy Ministerial is called the Clean Energy Solution Center. The Clean Energy Solution Center has looked at different renewable energy policies or sustainable energy policies. They've then computerized that. And then what they do is they have people 24 hours. If you look at the policy, you like it, you want to apply it to your country, and you don't understand certain things, you can ask them, then they respond to you. It's a computer-related solution center. So it is an interactive policy development center which will then assist in that. But what we have done is we have requested that Clean Energy Solution Center should be interfaced with the International Renewable Energy Agency. The International Renewable Energy is a global energy agency which includes most of the African countries are members to that. So if it is interfaced with it, it means our African members on the continent will also be able to benefit from the Clean Energy Solution Center. So that is some the kind of initiatives that we are engaging as the Minister of Energy, that is she's engaging in order to tap into what is developing at this initiative and give it back to the continent. Then on the issue of the refrigerators, I think the MEM has indicated that we will be able to get more in details on that model. Then the sanitaries will be invited. Then the Energy Forum is to invite the House to the Energy Forum. I think that is very possible. This year it is our 10 in South Africa to host the forum, and we will definitely pass the invitation. Then in terms of the bilaterals, the UN, okay. In terms of the multilaterals, we do have multilaterals. We do have a very strong relationship with the AU, the African Union. There's an African Union Energy Ministers Forum, which is called the Conference of African Energy Ministers. The president of that is the Mozambican president. We work very closely with them. And through that partnership, we, as MEM has indicated, there's an African energy partnership under the AU. There are about 8 partnerships for different sectors, and the energy partnership is one of them. We have, that is the EU now, Africa-EU Energy Partnership. Through that partnership, there are specified projects that have been identified that need to be implemented by 2020 in different countries, and we are playing a very strategic role in that. And as indicated, we are hosting a conference from the 8th to the 10th of May here in South Africa to ensure that we have the stakeholders, the civil society, the investors, government, and the companies from both the AU and the EU meeting to discuss how we can meet the targets as stipulated by the partnership. Then with the UN, we have a very close relationship with the UN, particularly with UNIDO, which is doing a lot of projects on energy efficiency in South Africa, both under the DTI and the Department of Energy. And during COP17, we saw quite a number of initiatives that have been done through the UN, and particularly the UNIDO. Then with respect to, so we have got relationship with the AU, we have got relationship with FEMA, we have got relationship with UN, we have also relationship with IPSA, India, Brazil, and South Africa, where mainly for that India, Brazil, and South Africa in the energy sector, the biofuels initiative is one of the important initiatives that we are looking at, besides so many other initiatives. Then with regard to nuclear, we haven't said much about nuclear, but we in fact also have the African Commission on Nuclear Energy, and that commission is supposed to be led by South Africa, and it was an initiative that was directed by the African Union, so that Africa can look at the issue of nuclear and what needs to be done, how we can participate in that, and the strategic position that the continent can take. Under that particular initiative, last year we had a conference for the African countries, and we had a number of those countries coming, and the IAEA assisted in hosting the conference and bringing the experts to come and educate us as a collective on the continent on nuclear-related issues, especially if you want to start the nuclear, what are the issues related, what are the policy requirements, what are the regulatory requirements, etc., etc. Then with regard to... I think it's the Zizabona. Why the Zizabona initiative, and why would other countries want to exclude South Africa? I'm not sure. I don't think that there is an exclusion of South Africa, but there is a need to link those three countries, because we are already linked with Botswana, we are linked with Namibia, we are linked with Zambia, but those countries, they don't have a link among themselves, so that it completes the circle. Like you have indicated that Germany doesn't have has done away with nuclear. It also receives its gas from Russia. They can only do that because of interconnectivity. Although Germany has banned nuclear, they are actually using nuclear energy from France because of interconnectivity. So I view this particular project within the context of enhancing connectivity between neighboring countries, because they are connected to us, but they are not connected among themselves. So they want to make sure that maybe for their own secret of supply, they get connected. Then the issue of the biofuels and food security conference. The conference is being hosted by FAO. South Africa has been requested to have two members. We will look into that issue. Then the issue of the 20 billion, whether it is being used for a specific program, basically the 20 billion is available for the energy sector. It is supposed to be used for all the energy related projects, as long as they are commercially viable and bankable projects. I think I have attempted to respond to most of the questions that Mimi had not looked at. Thank you.
Yes, you've really attempted, because we haven't heard your comment on the what I allege is the vagueness of the regional program, whether it's because you were very economic with your presentation here, whilst a clear and an in-depth program does exist at a regional level, not the DOE. We see there are a couple of projects, but do the project fulfill the strategic vision of ensuring security of energy supply at the end of the day? We see you've given us a demand and a supply situation, isn't it, honorable member? But the extent to which the regional program now, driven by SADC, does fulfill that is of interest, I'm sure, to everyone, you know. Let's hear it, you know, because to quite an extent, if you look at IRP, if you look at the medium-term risk mitigation strategy, If you look at your energy efficiency, if you look at whatever I've mentioned in South Africa, you do have a sense that you make serious attempts, you know, to fulfill security of supply, you know, up to effect of engagement in the hydrocarbons area, like we discovered, you know, during the refinery issues, whether there are still gaps there. Now, I say flip the other side of the coin, come to a regional level now, you know. I'll forgive you if you, because you didn't share much because of the being sensitive to time, but one would like to have a comment on that. Remember, I even made mention that there definitely are economic growth projections. You know, the extent to which a regional energy program does address or works out a strategy or presents a strategy that then says that this is how we will try and catch up with the economic growth on the basis of the projections that we get from the economic side. You have made a comment around the use of harmonization of legislation. I assume that you are with us on that. So, you I'm deliberately provoking it because you've got to raise it with your counterparts in support of our new campaign with honorable members, because we interact with our counterparts as parliamentarians. Still, once again, I want to warn, it's not that one is oblivious of the fact that we don't have a fully-fledged regional parliament, but at least we can still interact and influence each other, because harmonization, it's quite fundamental. I did check on the prospects of the European Investment Bank doing something meaningful in face of the Eurozone crisis at this stage, and also curiosity as to whether there are any other South-South initiatives in terms of funding. Also, around bilaterals, you know, it was still a comment, but in preparation for future interaction, that we'd like to ensure that we do get into grips with what exactly is contained in strategies and plans and programs around localization of manufacturing, as well as technology transfer. You know, those are very sensitive areas. They don't only need, you know, just sole and direct contribution of energy. Trade and industry comes in, your Doha comes in, everything, you know, by other, you know, competencies or other departments do come in, you know, particularly on the sensitivity of intellectual properties around transfer of technology. But I felt it's something that needs to be raised and flagged so that as we interact in future, you are aware that you'd like to hear more of it, even if it means at some stage we'll have to interact with other departments and other portfolio committees as well. Okay, I'm quiet now. You see, I've triggered them now. Okay, that I'm Lord and that is love.
One of the questions that she didn't answer on slide 23. Yes.
Slides 23 and 25.
On top of that slide, but the question was the implications of the
battery
technology,
yeah,
in respect to the demand. The current evening, we know that there is a low demand because people switch the lights off and they go and sleep. The stoves are off, the lights are off, electricity is off. Now, the battery technology would imply that we attempt to get the kind of battery that can last for the whole day or for X number of kilometers, which are normally, in the majority of instances, kilometers that would last for the whole day. And in the evening, these cars must now be put into the chargers. But now looking at the size or the number of cars South Africa is producing and is selling, and the demand it will make if all of those cars were electrified, were of a battery technology nature, that impact would be very negative in respect to the security of supply.
Thank you, honorable members. Let me start with the issue of the seemingly conflicting impact of the battery technology on security of supply, but I'm not so sure whether I understand the question. But the issue of the battery technology and the longevity of the battery is very important, because it allows you, instead of driving for 100 kilometers, it will allow you to drive for 500 kilometers. That is before you recharge. So that's the point that I wanted to highlight. Then the issue of recharging the battery at night. Once I can go for 500 kilometers and travel throughout the day non-stop, I can recharge at night. So that at night we have, when you look at your demand for electricity, it has got peaks. So what we will do by doing that, we are actually reducing the peaks, so that we know that we have a constant demand in terms of our consumption. Not really constant, but we reduce the peaks, because in the evenings there will also be demand. And then the other important issue is that because the technology to store electricity is not developed, what it means is the electricity that will, instead of just being idling, it will then be used to charge the cars. Then the last important point is that although we are talking to issue of the electric vehicle initiative, we don't foresee a situation where it will actually result in eliminating the use of oil and gas propelled vehicles. If we read the future of the oil and gas industry, we learn that it will be there for the foreseeable future. So it's not something that we can entirely replace, but we can augment it, because oil in itself is something that's not available perpetually. And these are some of the technologies that allows us to use what we have for a longer period, and also begin to initiate the transition and weaning ourselves off an energy source that we know will come to an end at some other point in time, probably in the next, I don't know how many generations from now. Then on the issue of regional related issues, the regional projects, the regional strategies, the harmonization of policies and regulations, I think the biggest challenge that is there is that the master plans are being developed. For example, the hydrocarbons, the oil and gas strategies being developed, the renewable energy strategies being developed. But the very important issue that needs to come out of that initiative is that having an initiative placed there is well and good, but implementing it is another important issue. Hence the discussion on the issue of individual country prioritization of different projects, which are driven by different needs in respective countries. So what is required is that from a government point of view, from the parliamentary processes, it is very important that the issue of energy be highlighted as an important and cross-cutting and catalyst to economic growth and economic development for the region, and hence to probe the other countries to ensure that the energy projects are prioritized. If you look at some of the projects that we have on the list, they've been there for a long time, but countries have not implemented those projects. If you read in the newspapers, we already see that there are countries that are receiving electricity, but the payment is not happening. We also see that there are other countries where their transmission system needs to be upgraded, so they need investment in those initiatives. So the drive for that, I think, should be political more than the energy ministers alone, because it is a political issue. It will become a very important and issue that will affect economic development, and it needs to be taken at a political level. And I have read a paper that was written on regional integration and the role of parliamentarians in regional integration. And in that paper, the expert indicated that regional integration will not be successful if there is no integration of parliamentarians, because the parliamentarians are driving the legislations and the policies of respective countries. Unless they speak the same language, it will be very difficult for regional programs, particularly in developing countries, to be successful.
Can you share that paper with us?
I can email the paper to the secretariat. So it is, and that author articulated on the role of parliamentarians and why the regional integration is not successful, because it is at that level of the parliamentarians, the different political groupings, where you make up your strategic objectives of the country. If the projects are not put through that system, at another level, you can talk, but if it doesn't have that fundamental breaking politically, it cannot be realized. So this was just an author that has been articulating on why regional integration has not been successful, particularly in Africa, and a special focus on SADC. It is an author's perspective. So I think it is something that we need to reflect on and ensure that there is that initiative is taken more seriously, and that the data harmonization starts at that level. Then on the issue related to the Eurozone, that the Eurozone is going through a fundamental a challenge, I agree. But what is also very important to note is that globally there is a competition for technology dominance, and also the competition to market technology. And there has been a demonstration that dependence on service sector is very dangerous. And hence countries are now flipping back, moving backwards, and driving technological innovation, and driving investment in that area, and also marketing their technologies to create opportunities, and promoting their technologies to promote new opportunities. So there is that global competition. And you see that the Americans are also getting aggressively into research and development, coming up with a new technology they want to put on the market. The European Union is also doing the same. The Asian group is also doing the same. So by promoting investments into the renewable energy sector, they are also indirectly going to be promoting their deployment of their own technologies. So I don't foresee a situation where they are going to disengage from that, because it will be something that will be misaligned to their own initiatives. And secondly, for the renewable energy technology to be successful and to be a cheaper as well, you need a bigger market, a bigger demand for the technology, so that there is mass production and the prices will come down. The only way to do it is to also initiate the development of potential markets for that, through ensuring that there is fund available for deployment purposes. So, and if you look at the European Union, they've changed their energy strategy as a union to focus more on renewable energy. I can't give you the percentages now, but they have come up with a new renewable energy strategy which focuses more on renewable energy, and therefore to promote their technologies and to promote their ideas, they have to make sure that it's a global initiative, and hence their focus on Africa, their focus also on Latin America as well, and Asia. So I'm confident that the funding will be coming through. Then the funding is a South-South initiative. We do have South-South initiative through IPSA, but it doesn't have a lot of financial element related to it. It doesn't have a lot of element related to it, but what I know is that In Africa, South Africa is the largest investor in the continent. So we are promoting the South-South funding initiatives because we are investing a lot into the continent. And the reason for investing a lot into the continent is going to be the fastest growing region globally in the next few years. And in fact, we have countries such as Nigeria is the leading growth point on the continent. So we are really moving in the right direction. And in general, the economic growth on the continent, despite the recession, has been on the upward movement. Then they need to take note of the issues related to manufacturing, technology transfer, etc., etc., in our strategies. I think that has been, we are working on that, and usually when we sign the MOU, we clearly indicate that they need to comply with the DTI requirements, they need to comply with the BEE requirements to make sure that this is taken care of. But as the Honorable Chair has indicated, the exact implementation of that will also require the participation of DTI. But in, for example, if you look at the IPP bids that were issued out, it also specifies the technology transfer requirements, the skills transfer requirements, and job creation requirements. Before the IPP is issued to a particular company, they need to indicate precisely what are their contribution to the economy in those respective areas and will be graded and awarded in compliance with our own set requirements. Then the issue of, let me now come to this diagram. So the supply and demand initiative. Maybe let me explain again. What we are saying is the installed capacity is the, like for our refineries, we have an installed capacity of about 700,000 barrels a day, but we are only able to produce 70% of that, which means that we have got certain our refineries are not working at full capacity. We have got certain challenges associated with that. We have too many unplanned shutdowns and so on and so forth. And it could also explain that the assets are too old and they are prone to shutdowns. And the same applies to our motor vehicles. Once it's old, your challenges are many. And hence, you have your installed capacity is high, but the actual capacity or the available capacity that is being used now is usually lower. And that is also, in some cases, a reflection of poor maintenance. We are aware that most countries are not putting a lot of money into our maintenance, and it also rings a bell to us to make sure that in our systems there is an insufficient allowance for maintenance. The municipalities are also providing sufficient amount to to do maintenance of their distribution lines and so on and so forth, and that is explaining why there is that deficit. So when they say the peak demand, your peak demand, you need to then say as your demand, what was the highest demand that the country had compared to your capacity and the available capacity. And so the peak demand simply says what was your highest demand. Like if normally our peak demand is sometime in the winter where everybody is switching on their heaters at the same time, and Eskom will be saying to people, we are now about to reach our peak demand, and encouraging people to either cook early and move away from the peak period. So the peak demand simply says what was the highest demand, what is the megawatts that are demanded at the most in a particular country. In other words, you have, if it is hot, the demand is not too much because you don't use your heaters. But it is, if it is winter, you use your solar geyser, you use your heaters, you use your lights, you cook, and then your demand will be like that. Then as the winter goes down, some people switch off their geysers, some people switch off their heaters, but others who are sensitive to cold, they still keep on having them. So you have that. So the peak demand is just the highest demand that has been recorded in a country at a particular time.
It's exceeding what is available. What does it mean? Does it mean blackouts? I don't know.
just simple calculation.
Okay. So what actually it means is that because we have this power pool agreement, if like ourselves during the World Cup soccer event, we signed agreements with the SADC member countries to say in the event that we have a peak demand because it was winter, we don't want to have load shedding. Can you please commit to giving us power? So you actually buy power from other countries because our winters, like in particularly a little bit north, like in your DRC, it's not so cold. Then you have other parts in Mozambique, it's not very, very cold. In Malawi, it's not very, very cold. In the northern part of Zambia, it's not very, very cold. So during our winters, they are able to sell the power to us, and we do the thing. So you actually avoid that peak by getting power from other countries. But for other countries, for example, in Zimbabwe, they are permanently on load shedding. Thank you. Then the other question was from page 25. What is it? The member wanted, honourable member wanted to know what is it that we are developing to ensure that we mitigate the identified problem. One of the initiatives that has been put in place is the Electricity Regulatory Authority, which is all the regulators for the countries that have regulators. They meet and discuss issues of power pooling, power wheeling, the licensing, the tariffing, and the compliance to those rules. So it's a very effective and efficient organization. But there are certain countries like Botswana, they still don't have a regulator. There are officials working on it, and they are also moving towards establishing a regulator. So we are working together, and we are trying to ensure that we mitigate some of those challenges. But issues related to funding will be rated on specific country specifications. But what South Africa has done in order to initiate investment in the region, they have indicated that, for example, 6% of our new generation capacity will be hydro. We know that we are not going to be able to have sufficient hydro on ourselves, but we are now giving indicators to investors that if you invest in a hydro project in Zambia, South Africa can be a market for that. If you invest in a hydro project in Mozambique, South Africa can be a market for that. So we are now also contributing to creating an enabling environment by ensuring that we have a market. Then in terms of wind, we have also done the same. We can now import wind energy from Lesotho. So by just having our policy, which has got a window for import, we have actually created an opportunity for those countries and created an enabling environment for investors to look favorably at our neighboring countries. So while it is small steps and initiatives, as I have indicated, there is also a need for the political process to take place and ensure that projects that are classified as a priority at a higher level, they also speak to a lower level so that they are accepted at a party political level, at a parliamentary level, at the government level, and then they can be initiated. So there should be a two-way process, and there should be a way where the initiative of government, political processes, and investors are interlinked to create that enabling environment. So in a nutshell, that's how South Africa has contributed through the integrated resource plan in the enabling project power imports. But we are then the RERA institution which has been implemented in the region, and also the need for the political will to drive the energy agenda in the region. I think I have now looked at most of the...
Done. I didn't even realize that I've just been sensitized by the secretary that we... biting in the lunch time. Apologies for that. I think it just shows how exciting this input has been. We got more than what we we expected and budgeted for. Thanks very much. But obviously, indications are that we'll have to address and handle international issues in a programmatic way. This was the first salvo. We've had a basic understanding of what we need to, what is happening, and surely when we have a rejoinder, we'll be more alert as to which areas you would like the department to highlight on. You know, really, this has been, you know, quite helpful, particularly the regional power pooling. You know, definitely, I'm sure the members would agree. We do have to accept that we've got a significant role to play, which goes beyond merely conducting oversight and even jointly oversight with other parliaments. It's also about ensuring that we, you know, contribute to the harmonization and also ensuring that we address the big demands. 75% of the SADC population still doesn't have access to electricity, and South Africa is the other way around. And, actually, that doesn't augur well in the long run, even for us. Honourable members, can we then, having thanked the department for its good job, look at the few things? We're supposed to have handled reports today, but unfortunately, even if Honorable Lucas was around, Honorable Tindo wouldn't be around for the report from Ghana, a very old report, which we have missed simply because we could not get them in one time. We just have to make sure the day they are around, we could dispense with it. I would like us to look at the two sets of minutes from on the meeting of the 22nd of November 2011. Can we go through the minutes? It's on a 3-page. Given that I'm guilty of and I'm not, I like that one. Okay. Friday. What about Friday? Yeah. Okay, let's look. I mean, we just have two sets of minutes. We'll quickly dispense with them. That be the case, honorable members, the department and everyone. Bye, Danki, Nolebuha. Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.